As Europe's energy system becomes more decentralized and renewable-heavy, the use of flexibility is increasingly recognized as a key lever to ensure system stability. But are we making the most of it, and what digital tools can we use to unlock its potential? To explore this, I'm joined by Michael Villa, Executive Director at SmartN, and Jochem van Hove, Managing Director, Energy and Resources EMEA at Microsoft. I'm Yusuf Latif, and this is the Energy Transitions Podcast. Michael, there's a lot of buzz around flexibility at the moment, but is it being used to its full potential in the energy sector? Paint us a picture.
Thanks for the invite to this podcast. Well, first of all, we need to clarify what we mean with flexibility. Flexibility means a lot of things and can be provided by many different resources. Until now, and historically, we are more acquainted to flexibility provided by big generation power plant. And now we need to think about new forms of flexibilities, notably the demand side flexibility. So the distributed flexibility potential by consumers with their homes, or with their electric vehicles, or even with very large energy-intensive industries. In order to activate the flexibility from these consumers, you need to be exposed to price signal or incentives. And we are not there yet to exploit this full potential. Not because we don't have flexible resources deployed in buildings in industries, but indeed because we are missing these signals. So we need to have system operators that are procuring, they are using the flexibility of connected consumers. We need to have suppliers sending price signals through dynamic electricity price contracts to consumers. And we need to have to make use of all the data platforms that are allowing that to make it possible.
It comes down to a lot of decentralized assets connecting to the power system. And I think digital technologies can kind of play a role here in tapping into the potential that they offer. Jochem, from your side, what kind of digital tools, AI, how is it being used to really tap into the potential from flexibility resources?
Also from my side, thank you very much for hosting this, for the opportunity to dive into this exciting topic. It's great to be here. As Michaela already said, flexibility is definitely also a data play or a data game. So when you talk about digital technologies, intelligent technologies, you mentioned AI, which is very much my language these days as well, but it goes way further than that. So cloud data, I think ultimate flexibility comes with real-time insights. And that requires that everything is connected, but also connected in such a way that data can flow. Data can be accessible to those who need to make the choices. And it's super exciting from where we're sitting to see how fast things are moving in, I think, in that direction, in the right direction. So AI and Gen AI are capabilities we as Microsoft are also fully embracing. Learning by doing, what can it help us do better in terms of how can we become more flexible with our loads? So every new data center that we bring online is also a moment where we sort of add to that flexibility. Also hoping and believing it's an example for others to see what's possible today, what can be possible around the corner. And we're not the only ones doing that. So it's exciting to see how the industry is opening up and showing this is what flexibility can look like on a local scale, but also you talked about heavy industries or energy intensive industries, what can be done there.
It's great to see all of this kind of unfolding in front of us. It's incredibly complex, and I think it's only going to continue getting more complex. How do you, Michael, how do you see these tools be continuing to develop as the system becomes more decentralized, distributed even?
Yeah. So the our industry, the flexible demand management industry, the industry that I represent through SmartN, it's already using a lot of AI, machine learning tools to support the operation, to forecast, and so it's already much more competitive compared to other clean tech industries. Demand side flexibility is by definition time dependent, and to have this time dependence adjustment, you need to have a lot of data from consumers, from system operators, from wholesale electricity markets. So we need to use all the tools, mechanisms that are combining different data sources, translate that into a message, and have a seamless activation through data-enabled solutions, so that the activation of the flexibility of the consumers is done very rapidly. Sometimes it's a question of milliseconds in reaction to a request from a system operator to keep the system in balance. So we are really talking about the use of AI to really support crucial systemic needs with the support of distributed resources. So the decentralization with digitalization can make the system work. And this is an important revolutionary change of the operation of the energy system. Because indeed, in the past, we were very much used to system operators calling the big power plants and asking them to turn on, turn off, increase production, reduce production, and it was really done by calls. Now, indeed, we needed to rely to a decentralized system that is, however, connected with reliable and secure digital tools.
It all comes back down to data, right? Becoming increasingly connected. Joachim, you also mentioned Gen AI there for a second. What are some of the tangible ways that this is already being done? I don't know if we can go into like use cases, examples.
Well, happy to. I think use cases were become super real. This is what's happening today. So happy to share and show others what we've already learned. And one of the use cases is, I think GenAI is an amazing capability in terms of becoming more accurate. So Michael talked about forecasting, applying GenAI to that is, and we're not only seeing it ourselves, I think other actors in the industry also experimenting, learning with this and seeing the same type of impact. Your accuracy can go up. And that means something in terms of how you're able to predict outages in the system. Which is a huge part of sort of how flexibility ultimately can work or cannot work. AI, Gen AI also allows us to do a better job in understanding what workloads can we sort of play with, can we shift with, can we, and that shift, I mean that both in terms of time, but also in location. Where do they run? When do they run? I think that's a game where becoming a little bit better is making a huge difference. And I think Gen AI is not allowing us to become only a little bit better, but a lot better.
Michael, anything to add there?
We can also have different use cases already now of the application. I mean, I'm considering some independent aggregators or supplier with some aggregation services that are using indeed AI in order to build on the data that they are getting from their clients, from their consumers, matching that with weather forecast, matching that also with data from system operators, and then optimizing the use of these resources. But this is not only applied to a service to consumers, but also eventually to system operators. So if system operators are sharing data with market players, then market players with AI can have a better visibility of the status of the network and also have a real-time improvement of the operation of the network. So this is another type of AI use for a different client, not a consumer, but a system operator.
I mean, it's great to hear this. It's developing so interestingly, especially to watch as everything, again, I come back to this, but becoming more connected, right? But then cybersecurity. What are some of the cybersecurity concerns you think we should be aware of as we continue to develop these technologies and, again, become more connected? Joachim, I don't know.
I'm super glad that you bring this topic to the table. I think it's such a crucial element in the discussions. At Microsoft, it even starts with that. So how can we, by design, ensure security is given the appropriate attention. And I want to say one thing to, I want to say two things about security. One is the pace of change, the pace of innovation, the pace of development is, I think, unparalleled. Also in terms of what cybersecurity actors, threat actors are able to do. So being aware of that, staying on top of cyber is one. And the other thing is, I think there is a a debate, and that's a very natural debate about on-prem, hybrid, mm-hmm. in cloud. I think the assumption that being disconnected is safer, I think that's not a good starting point for considering how can we do the best possible job.
Michael?
I would like to start by saying that cybersecurity is indeed extremely important concern, but also opportunity, and needs to be tackled. But it should not be used as an excuse not to do digitalization. So we needed to have a compromise with innovating, failing, but also being resilient and cybersecure. That's why, indeed, you institutions are, anyway, considering this digitalization of the energy system as a cybersecure field to tackle. So we needed to define what is a high-risk activity and what is not a high-risk activity, and then eventually set some specific standards or use the standards that are already available in a very seamless and distributed widespread way. But it should not be a limit not to, or it should not be a concern not to digitalize. We have the rules, we have the framework. Maybe we needed to further detail these with a development of the business models. But indeed, there should not be an excuse not to digitalize.
And indeed, as digital technologies continue to develop, I think, Joachim, you put it nicely in how threat actors will also continue to develop. So it's kind of just continuing to become more mature in our technologies in a way. You mentioned policies there also briefly, Michael. I want to go into kind of continuing to enable these digital technologies to develop. For both of you, what would be the single most impactful thing that policymakers or operators could, what kind of measures could they take today to really properly make use of digitally enabled flexibility?
If I look at the EU and not at individual actors, we needed to have indeed a common European energy data space to make this happen in an harmonized way across Europe, looking at all the dimensions from the big system operators to the consumers. There is work ongoing. There is now a reality check of this framework that has been set up by, in particular, through the Insieme project. So that's what needs to be done. So to translate principle in activities using available standards and make that operational.
Joachim, anything to add there?
This is a super complex question.
It is.
It's the single most important thing. Also because it's such a delicate balance to get right in a sort of a dynamic that's fast, that has so many angles. So what I come back to is ultimately to make this work, we talk about flexibility at scale, on demand, sort of insights wherever, whenever. That comes down to trust. You need to be able to trust the data, trust each other in that system. And I think that's something also policymakers should start with.
What type of regulatory changes or even market design changes would we need to see in order to properly value the type of flexibility that can come from certain digital assets like data centers, using them as sources of flexibility? I wonder, Michael, if you can kind of provide
some insight on that. We do not need to have sector-specific provisions. I mean, data centers are, as any other energy-intensive industry, a type of consumer. So the rules are already there. The European Union rules are already there. They have been developed from 2018 until 2023. The framework is there. There are 70 articles through six between the directives and regulations. So flexible demand, the market design architecture is there. What we needed to do is to complement that these market design and specific maybe requirement for buildings, industries and vehicles with the data architecture that I was referring to before with the common European energy data space. Yes, there. Some work needs to be done. But then it's a question of, using these rules and making sure that there is a possibility for data centers to indeed steer their industrial processes in a voluntary-based, in a market-based way, when possible, in reaction to price signals or incentives. It should not be mandated when it's not possible. I mean, data centers need to do what they need to do, as the same also for a vehicle. An electric vehicle is a resource to move one person from place A to place B. The same for an aluminium or a steel manufacturing industry. They need to produce, but there are some moments in their industrial production process or use of some resources that are not used, like UPS in data centers, that can be used to provide system services. By doing that, they are the consumers are rewarded. They are in the sense that they are maybe reducing their energy consumptions. And they also even get in remuneration for the services that they are providing to the system that they're connected to. This is where we need to go. Rules are there.
Joachim, I know data center specifically isn't necessarily the top of your wheelhouse, but I know that Microsoft is a member company of SmartAir, and I know that there's some use cases of how data centers are already being used in this way. I don't know if there's anything you can comment on there.
I can only fully echo what Michael just shared. So it's good to keep it in the context of the bigger system that it's part of. I think Microsoft, and the same goes for our peers. I think going through this transformation together in a transparent way, I think that's the way to do it. As we build trust as an industry, as a sector, as an ecosystem, that this is a way that's both robust, resilient, but also fair and transparent. So echoing what you just said, absolutely.
Looking ahead, what does an energy system look like where flexibility from EVs, buildings, industry, and again, assets like data centers are all coordinated in real time? Almost what conditions need to be in place to make a market like that thrive?
First of all, having the data, the standardized interfaces to make this market possible, and then also having the consumers being called to offer this flexibility because they are getting a reward. And this is extremely important as a process. We should not think about the opposite process, so that the consumers need to provide and have everything ready to offer the flexibility. No. If there are no mechanism where to offer this flexibility, you should not put the burden on the consumer. And I'm always doing a very simple example. So if a consumer has would like to change his heating system with the one of a heat pump, well, he can buy a damp heat pump or a smart heat pump. The smart heat pump might cost a bit more than a damp heat pump. So he has this choice. And if I am obliging someone to buy a smart heat pump, but then I cannot use that in a flexible, smart way because I don't have the mechanism to offer this flexibility, then I'm going to put a burden on the consumer. So I'm asking you to pay more, but then ultimately the operation of this resource is dumb, and I am then ultimately having a capex cost that is higher, but I'm not allowed or I'm not put in the position to reduce the operating cost of my appliance because there are no mechanisms. So that's a question of priorities.
I'm aware that we've kind of come to time, a bit of just conscious of time coming down. Joachim, anything to add there? Final thoughts?
Yeah, I want to put in a different pair of lenses, and that's the one of agentic AI. And I'm doing that because I think one of the areas where Gen AI really shines is helping us automate complex tasks. And flexibility at scale, at the scale that you just pictured, Youssef, I think is a scenario, a situation where complexity is at a level we really need to lean in, I think, into the opportunities, possibilities that digital technology will bring us, intelligent technology. And if you look at that through that lens, I think you see a world where if we adopt the right mindset, because the way we work is changing, the way we organize ourselves, the way we organize work is changing, if we lean into that, then the combination of human and agentic AI, human and agents, with on-demand intelligence, I think is a really powerful combination to help make that possible, perhaps even sooner than we think today.
How do you see that type of market developing? Because agentic AI is very relevant right now. It's gaining more traction within our energy system. How is that going to continue? What are we seeing happening in the near future?
Well, we see organizations who lean into that, who realize the pace of innovation is as fast as it's never been before. Innovations that once took years can now happen in months or weeks. Organizations who lean into that, it's easy to say they will be the leaders of tomorrow, but there will be advantages to gain from that. So I think you will see progress coming out of those organizations who lean into becoming a frontier firm, as we say at Microsoft, really, and on say on-demand intelligence and that human and AI collaboration is the center. I think that will unlock more than we perhaps realize today.
In terms of flexibility specifically, how does that impact the way that clean tech assets are being used? Maybe Michael, you can weigh in here as
it's
well.
It's a question of efficiency. Mm. It's a question of efficiency operation at the end. You know, you're using AI tools in order to make the operation of our everyday life much more cost effective. Mm. So that's, well, so it's, if you want to save, if you want to be more resource efficient, that's where we need to go. It's a question of prioritizing also where investment needs to be going. And that's the priority, I think.
Joachim, anything to add on to that?
Super well said. Efficiency, absolutely number one. Yeah.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us and sharing your insights on the podcast.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Pleasure.
For more insights, join the Inlet community.